The second case for oral argument this morning is Brady Stuvey, appellant versus the State of South Dakota Appellee. For the appellant, Mr. Stuvey, we have Mr. Scott Bratlin, an attorney from Watertown. And for the state, we have Mr. Gary Campbell, an assistant attorney general. I've been advised by the clerk's office that there may be a firearm sounded during this oral argument. We have tried to urge the powers that be not to do that, but it may happen. And I will leave it to counsel if that occurs. If you think it's distracting enough, simply stop, and we'll shut the clock down until the alarms quit. It's just a test. There's no fire. But if you want to keep going, keep going. So with that admonition, Mr. Bratlin, you have 20 minutes, sir.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Scott Bratlin from Watertown, South Dakota. I represent the defendant and appellant Brady Stuvey. Thank you for the opportunity to come here today to address this issue. The issue, in my opinion, is pretty straightforward. It's whether the failure to comply with established guidelines renders the sobriety checkpoint in question in Watertown, South Dakota, unconstitutional. I think that's a pretty straightforward issue. The facts don't need to be discussed in great detail. I believe that the facts would show that on June 28, 2008, my client, Brady Stuvey, came upon a sobriety checkpoint without any knowledge that there was a checkpoint going to be had in Watertown at that time and at that place. Nobody in Watertown knew about that. Nobody anywhere knew about that checkpoint except for Watertown Police Department. In looking at the history of sobriety checkpoints, obviously, the SITS case, Michigan Department of State Police versus SITS, is the one that everybody talks about. In that case, which is way different than this case, before they had a sobriety checkpoint in Michigan, there's some background that's discussed in that opinion that says the director of the state police appointed a sobriety checkpoint advisory committee comprising representatives of the state police force, local police forces, state prosecutors, and the University of Michigan Transportation Research Institute. I don't know all the details of what happened at those meetings, and we all know what happens in committees. They discuss things, and eventually they decide to do something or not do something. And here, I guess they decided that the committee should create guidelines governing sobriety checkpoints, and apparently that's what they did. They set forth procedures governing checkpoint operations, site selection, and publicity. And I guess after reading all the case law, those are probably the three primary areas that anyone would be concerned about in discussing checkpoints.
And your main concern is the publicity in this case, is that right?
Well, I think it's the publicity. That's the main concern. I would also say that the site selection without any established data really bothered me at the suppression hearing. We had a order for discovery signed in January, and the hearing wasn't for several weeks later, and I never did receive one thing about why we had it at this location and obviously why nobody knew about it, but that's correct.
Well, there was some testimony about that, though, wasn't there?
There was some testimony from Officer Ellis about a lot of different things. I think he was pulling numbers out of the air and trying to remember exactly what happened and why it happened, but there was no data that substantiated why they picked that location, and obviously no explanation as to why nobody knew about it, but that was addressed at the suppression hearing.
Well, it's Highway 12, which is probably your major highway in Watertown, isn't it? I mean, it's a lot of traffic on it, isn't it?
It wouldn't be Highway 12, it would be Highway 212.
212, I mean, yeah, I'm thinking Aberdeen, sorry. But, I mean, that is your major highway. There is with the most traffic on it, so wouldn't that have some common sense reasoning for having it there?
Possibly. Okay. I guess I wouldn't want to sit here and guess why they had it there. It'd be nice to know exactly why they had it there instead of having a hearing and asking the question and finding out for the first time as he tried to remember exactly why it was there. But I guess it would make sense. It's a busy intersection, but If that was the case, I guess you would just say in all your notices, we're going to have it at the busiest place in town and see what happens.
But remind me then, what do the guidelines say about picking a spot or the case law?
Well,
what should they have looked at?
There's two separate sets of guidelines that bring us here today, and the Watertown Police Department guidelines discuss having data to back up that location. And I think the officer tried to explain exactly why they picked what they picked. The SITS case goes into great detail about how many people were involved in fatalities in certain areas and how many people were arrested as a result of what happened in picking that. Obviously, the data would consist of more than speculation. It would be, we need to have this address. There's been some major accidents on this location, and that's why we're going to have a checkpoint here, because we want to see what's going on.
Well, Ellis testified, if I understand the record right, Ellis testified that there were prior traffic fatalities on Highway 212.
Yes.
Isn't that sufficient?
Well, I think it's sufficient to say there were fatalities there. I think their guidelines would talk about why they had it there and how many fatalities were there and why would they would pick that location instead of others. And obviously, that's not my main issue. That's one of the issues. But my main problem with this checkpoint is that there was no notice given. I don't think I have a very good case to say the data wasn't appropriate. I don't agree that you can just pick a spot and then show up for the first time and say, here's why we did this.
Now, you say there was no notice given. How much notice needs to be given, in your opinion?
In my opinion, if you look at the exhibits presented at the suppression hearing, when I had other cases like this, I asked for the same documentation I asked for in this case. Why did you pick this spot, and who knew about it, and what's going on, and exhibits 3 and 4 are perfect examples of what should happen. When I asked for documentation, I received documents from the Division of Highway Patrol that said exactly what happened and why it was picked, and a media release was sent to individuals on a certain date. It was published in the newspaper on a certain date, and it was put on the radio on a certain date. And I had two exact files like that. And when you ask for those documents and you get them, you're pretty much done. I mean, they did what they said they'd do, and you know, you move on to the next file.
Well, here they, I don't think there's a dispute that they sent the public release information to the Watertown Public Opinion. For some reason, the paper decided not to print it. And I
think there's a dispute. I don't frankly don't know about that email. We received that the morning before the suppression hearing. It's not very difficult in today's age with technology to send an email, have return receipt, have them send back documentation. The biggest problem you have here is that the city of Watertown decided they were going to do something different than the Highway Patrol, and they were going to try to do things their own way, and they failed miserably at doing that. You know, I asked Officer Ellis at the suppression hearing, I'm looking at this policy you have, how did this come about? And in the transcript, he says, basically, the Highway Patrol told us if we're going to do this and they're not responsible, that we better have some guidelines. And so we came up with these guidelines. To get back to the other question about how much notice, I guess the guidelines in Watertown say no earlier than 10 days documentation should be given to somebody. It's a little frustrating to think that the city of Watertown wouldn't just do exactly what the Highway Patrol does. They tried to copy those guidelines. They pretty well copied them, but in implementation, it's people say apples and oranges. I think those two are more similar than dissimilar. I'd say it's night and day. I mean, to get the documentation I got back about the notice and how simple it is to say that you had that notice and people received it, it's really frustrating to think that in our town, you know, the smaller the town, the more interesting the newspapers are. But in our town, we have notices about if you don't shovel your sidewalk, we're going to shovel it for you and we're going to charge you for it. If you don't mow your grass, we're going to charge you and do it. We get notices all the time about road construction. We get notices that the Watoma relays are being held and you can't drive down this area because it's going to be blocked off. The purpose of all those notices is that they give you an option to avoid the consequences, to avoid the road construction.
Right, Mr. Bratlin, you're claiming that this is constitutionally defective. If notice was given to the newspaper, whether or not they published it or not, how is it constitutionally defective? You're saying you'd like it different, you'd like it like the Highway Patrol, but how is that constitutional? Is it, explain how it's constitutionally defective.
Well, I believe it's an unreasonable stop of the vehicle, unreasonable seizure of the person, because there was no warrant, there was no reasonable suspicion that he did anything wrong on June 28th. He was driving his vehicle. It's kind of frustrating to think that you can get notices for everything. I don't think you can take a judgment in South Dakota. I should not have said it in the last case because I had a headache trying to figure out what was going on. I felt like I was in law school again, completely lost into the discussion. But I think that to even take a judgment in small claims court, you have to give notice. You can't take a $50 judgment against somebody. So how can you stop this vehicle without letting anybody know when you're going to do it? There's a bunch of cases out there. I can't keep up with all of them. I don't think the state can either. I think if you Googled that sobriety checkpoint issue today, or if you got on Westlaw today, there would be 10 more cases. I haven't seen one case addressed by the state that says guidelines were in place and those guidelines were not followed, but we're going to say the checkpoint's okay anyway. We have to get back to why we have the guidelines in place to begin with, because clearly we can't drive out today after this is done and have the police just plop a sign on saying we're stopping people right here. I mean, you can't do that without giving people notice and have some data justifying that. So we can't let this happen without the guidelines being followed. I really don't think they could set up a checkpoint outside the Dakota Dome after the football games, the AA championships, or the USD state game and say, we're just stopping people right now. Well, nobody knew about that. Why would you do that? Because we can do whatever we want. There's no information given to the public. As far as the attempted notice, I don't know, I'm not very good at contracts and civil law, but I just think that attempted notice is no notice. I really don't understand the memorandum opinion issued by the trial court. There's a part in there that doesn't really make any sense to me. It wasn't a finding, but I have no idea in that opinion where the court indicated that due to a change of employment, specifically it says at least 1 week prior, Ellis sent notice of the June 8th checkpoint to the local newspaper with instructions to publish the notice. Unbeknownst to Ellis, the newspaper failed to publish the notice due to a change in employees. You know, I have no idea where that came from. That wasn't testified to. That wasn't made a proposed finding. It wasn't a finding that was signed by the court. And so I don't think you can read anything into that because that wasn't presented. The only evidence we have is that he claims that he sent an email to the public opinion.
Well, are you saying then that the City of Watertown Police Department should have bought an ad in the public opinion to guarantee that thing got in the paper? Because clearly, if you just send an informational email, it's up to Editor Roby and his staff whether they publish it or not. The police department has no legal right to order them to. So are they supposed to be buying ads?
I think it comes out as a public service announcement on the radio. I don't think they're charged for that. They sure do it now. I mean, Ellis testified at our hearing. We do now. Everybody knows about our checkpoints, and I guess that's great for all of us right now, but it sure doesn't help my client on June 28th. I guess I don't know if the paper charges for that. The Highway Patrol does it. I've got documentation in Exhibits 3 and 4, exact documentation as to where it goes and when it was advertised on the radio, June 6th and 7th in this particular case, it was on the radio. It wouldn't be that big a deal to just send an email and say, did you get this? Can you put it in the paper? I mean, they don't have them that often. It's not like they have to do it every week.
Do the Highway Patrol notices state the specific location where it's going to be at?
Yes.
That's part of the regulation, isn't it?
Yeah, it's part of their regulation. Those notices, I believe, document when and where.
Do you read SITS as requiring that?
Well,
that it has to be a prior notice when and where for the deterrent effect of it?
I guess I don't read it that way. It doesn't really get into guidelines as much as saying that Pursuant to established guidelines, this is what happened. I could not find the guidelines that were approved in SITS. I think it's interesting to see that when that case got remanded, they got rid of sobriety checkpoints. That's kind of the irony of this whole situation, is that everybody stands on the SITS stool and says you can have checkpoints, but they don't even have them in Michigan anymore when that case got remanded. But I don't think the issue is difficult. We have guidelines. We have to follow them or not. And I don't think they followed them at all. And it doesn't make any sense that the officer made it very clear at the suppression hearing that the Highway Patrol, it sounds to me like, pretty much said, if we're not going to be involved in this, then you better have some guidelines and you better follow them, because that's what Ellis testified to.
So is this at all similar to like the roadblocks that are set up for immigration and so on? I mean, is that at all comparable here? I'm assuming those roadblocks are always in the same spot, coming in the country or whatever, so you'd always know where they were.
Right. Well, I think it's similar in that people are stopped. As far as, I don't think this case is similar to any other case I've read. I don't think it is. When they discuss SITS and they talk about the balancing test from the Brown case and the other cases, I don't think you get to that. I think you just say, we have specific guidelines here. Do they have to do what they say they're going to do or not? I mean, I don't just give up on the idea that they should have established data that anybody can look at to see why they picked these sites. I think we can sit here today and say, well, it makes sense to have it on 212. Maybe not. And that's why I asked for that documentation, to see why they picked it. There's one other issue with the guidelines that they didn't follow. I don't think that's that big a deal compared to the other two issues I have. The other issue being the supervisor didn't sign off on it. I don't think I waived it like the state said, because I'm saying the guidelines were not followed, so they weren't followed. But I don't think it takes much to give notice to the public, and I don't think we can sit here today and say, well, they don't have to do anything. They can do whatever they want. They don't have to have any data. They don't have to give notice. They don't have to follow the guidelines they came up with. It's their own guidelines. They didn't have a committee, as far as I know. Ellis just said he's kind of the DUI sobriety checkpoint guy, and it's kind of up to him. And so that's what he did. As far as the email, you know, I frankly don't want to say he was lying about the email. I just don't know, you know, when it was sent and why it took that long to get it. You know, the discovery order had been in place. This case has been going on forever. We've been asking for all documentation they had. And he said he attempted to send the email. The only part about that assertion that bothers me is the trial court hearing things that I didn't hear about the change in employment and things like that. I don't know where that came from. But I don't think it takes a lot to say that, and you can get a text message on your phone right now that says where the checkpoints are. Everybody can sign up for that. You can put it on the internet. You can tell people you're going to do things instead of catching them by surprise, because that's exactly what happened here. At today's age, I mean, I'll need the help of my teenage kids to figure out some of the technology, but I know how to email. And I know how to read a website, and they can put it on there. And what's most troubling, I guess, is during the suppression hearing, Ellis says, well, we do that now. We know what to do. We do that now. And the Highway Patrol, in every case that I've had with them, has done it the way they say they're going to do it, and I've never had any issues with that.
So what are you saying, then, the failure to follow those guidelines then makes it unreasonable, as far as the stop, and therefore unconstitutional?
Absolutely. There's no reasonable suspicion to stop my client, and there's no warrant for his arrest.
And then because the guidelines weren't followed, then it's not reasonable otherwise. Is that
correct? That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Bell. Nobody is criticized for quitting early if they've said what they had to say. Mr. Campbell, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor, members of the court. My name is Gary Campbell. I'm here from the Attorney General's office, representing the state, which is the plaintiff and the appellee here. Now, of course, as Mr. Bratlin mentioned, this was a stop on during the early morning hours of June 28th in 2008. It was on Highway 212 in Watertown. It's a As Justice Gilbertson pointed out, it's a major thoroughfare through town. The Corporal Ellis, who was the DUI coordinator for the department and was responsible for setting up the checkpoint, testified that the site was chosen because of a history of DUI activity in that location and fatality. DUI fatality near the KFC franchise on 212. Now, his testimony was a little bit vague in some ways, but it was absolutely clear that the criteria he used were the DUI activity and history there, safety of the public, and safety of the officers. He specifically testified he wasn't putting at a dip after a hill so that you come over the hill and say, oh, hi, surprise. Now, that surprise aspect comes into the major point Mr. Bratlin was trying to make regarding the lack of advanced publicity. I haven't found one case that said advanced publicity was absolutely essential. It is a factor among many. As his own cases pointed out, I think it was the Downey case out of Tennessee, that the list of factors regarding the reasonableness of a highway checkpoint can be endless, and no one factor is absolutely decisive. When you look at Hunt, Gershoffer, and Downey, the cases that he relies on, in those cases there were a number of problems in each case, and in none of them was lack of publicity the key the court relied on. It was a factor that they would mention. It was not a factor that was absolutely determinative. When you look at SITS and we look at the other cases cited in the briefs, what emerges is that the advance notice serves a couple of purposes. Number one, it increases the efficacy of the checkpoint in that it serves deterrence. If people know there's going to be a checkpoint out there or increased patrol activity, then of course maybe some drivers who would otherwise be out on the road drinking wouldn't be there. Okay, fine. But SITS is the mother load on this topic, and SITS does not rely on the advanced publicity. In fact, the SITS case really took to task the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals decision and the state courts below for going too deeply into the efficacy of checkpoints and deterring DWI. What it relied on heavily was the fact that the checkpoint was effective in that it did stop at least two or three drunk drivers, which is exactly what happened here. In this case, the results were, I believe, three DUIs in plus one open container case out of I think SITS was like 118 stops, and this one was 128 stops, or vice versa. So I think that this case, as far as the efficacy of the checkpoint goes, is in line with SITS. There really isn't any reason to go beyond that to say, as the courts that the defendant cites do, that, well, that without the advanced publicity, there's a lack of deterrence, and therefore it's unsuccessful. All three of those cases that the defendant is relying on are decided under the state constitution. They are not decided under the Fourth Amendment. They're not decided on the U.S. Constitution. Now, this court has previously said, I believe it was in Cotman, that you can make that argument, but if you do, you better show good reason for it. History, legislative history, that kind of thing, or wording in the statutes. And here there's nothing like that presented. Instead, what we're presented with is, well, the Highway Patrol does it. The Highway Patrol is not the arbiter of constitutionality. And when you look at what was done here...
But it does set guidelines on what's a... I mean, it sets the base on what's a reasonable roadblock. I mean, wouldn't you look at those guidelines, however, whether it's the Highway Patrol or the local ones, as least a threshold question of, if you meet all these guidelines, it's reasonable. It's a reasonable way to go about doing a roadblock so that it's constitutional. I guess I'm concerned here. You are not suggesting that the police can ignore their own guidelines, are you?
No, I'm not. And I think if you look at the record here, the guidelines were followed. Defendant's first argument was that they didn't rely on established data in choosing a site for the checklist. Ellis's testimony, while it's vaguer than it might have been, does contradict that. And I don't think you can call the trial court's reliance on Ellis's testimony in that regard as clearly erroneous. The second point is that it failed to provide notice to the public. It failed to provide notice to the public, but I don't think you can really place the entire burden of that on the police department or Corporal Ellis. He did send, according to his testimony, an email to the Watertown newspaper. He says it was sent on the 20th of June, which was 8 days before the checkpoint took place. Now, he testified it happened. There was a copy of the email produced at the hearing. Now, it may have been short notice for Mr. Bradlin, for which I apologize, but it happened. But it is in the record. Now, when notice is given, but the press doesn't print it or publicize it, is that the fault of the police department? I don't think so. I think we still have freedom of the press here. You can lead the press to water, but you can't make them print.
Well, there are other ways to give notice. I think, you know, like in Sioux Falls, they have boards that they put up and give you notice.
Well, and there are other media, too. There's a radio.
There's other media.
Sure. I think that
I think probably is where I've seen them more often than maybe the newspaper.
Right. Well, as a matter of fact, under the program, and this isn't in the record, but under the program, that the Watertown got a grant from the state for this DUI program, and those ads are all over television, especially around the holiday. The guys roll, cranking, the officer stops somebody, they're cranking down the window of the car, and what's supposed to be beer, I guess, comes, I hope it's beer, pouring out of the window, you know, over the limit, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, we really are saturated with DUI enforcement media. Now, in this particular case, it wasn't given. The notice was given to the press. The press didn't go ahead with it. If you look at cases where notices have been ignored, I think particularly the Rastogi case out of Pennsylvania, they're saying, well, you can't fault the police. Most of them involve situations where a number of notices were sent out and one response. I think that where there's a total lack of response, it's unusual. I think it's also unusual to have only one segment of the media notified. But be that as it may, the bottom line constitutionally is that advance notice is not constitutionally required.
But it does fit in the whole idea of whether or not it was reasonable.
It can certainly help to make it more reasonable. And I think the fact that the methods taken by the police department here were a little substandard. I mean, they did make an effort, but it wasn't the effort it might have been. Does that render the stop unconstitutional? No, it doesn't. One thing that the courts talking about notice to the public rely on often in lieu, well, maybe not often, but the Rastogi case particularly and some of the others, they're relying on the amount of the visibility of the checkpoint. The point of the advance notice and the point of the selection of the location and the marking of the location, flashing lights, signs in advance of the stop and that kind of thing, is to reassure a driver driving along the road that, you know, this is an official proceeding. Another factor is officers in uniform. In this case, there was a sign lit with a light at least 100 yards in advance of the checkpoint.
What did that say, that sign? The lit sign, what did it say?
It was notice of checkpoint. I don't remember the word.
Sure, the one we're talking about, yeah.
Yes.
And it was a sign that had information on it, or does it say this is a roadblock for purposes of what? Does it say? Just out of curiosity.
Oh, it might have. It was, I don't know the exact wording, but it was notice of a roadblock, and the sign had its own light. And that's something that courts will look at as being in favor of reasonableness, because it's not a surprise. As Ellis testified, you know, not being in a dip and not being hidden, it was visible from a distance, and if you know 212, it's pretty much a straight line in that area. So it wasn't a matter that a driver would be surprised that there was a stop there. And that, courts will look at that as an alternative to, as a form of notice to the public as opposed to the media. They do not say that the lack of notice in the media, publicity, is itself fatal. And that, I think, is the key point that I wish to make regarding his primary argument. The only remaining argument is really the one about the report after the fact that wasn't signed. Well, the guidelines don't make any reference to the report having to be signed. They make reference to the information that has to be there. Now, it doesn't require a listing of the officers, although the appellant's brief may imply that. Does that come from the Highway Patrol? It might. I don't know. But that's not in the Watertown Police Department guidelines.
Is it unusual for a local police department to have their own guidelines as opposed to just following the ones established by the state?
That I don't know. There was one case, I think it was the Tennessee case, cited by the defendant, which said that it was something about the policies from the Attorney General's office were not determinative of the constitutionality. And if you look at SIT, I mean, SIT says, okay, there were guidelines that were followed, but it went on to analyze the constitutionality under the Brown v. Texas analysis, where you balance the intrusiveness to the motorist against the strong interest of the state in taking drunk drivers off the road. Now, what Sitz said was that in that particular case that the intrusion was minimal, the state's interest was strong, and the roadblock was constitutional. And I think that same result should apply here. And the court said that, by and large, the guidelines were followed, and in fact they were. And with that, if there are no questions, I will yield my time.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Campbell.
Thank the court.
Mr. Bratlin, you have 10 minutes, sir.
With respect to the issue regarding data, I still believe that we should have more evidence presented to the trial court to see if there is established data that justifies this location. At the suppression hearing, the transcript shows on page 11. When I asked specifically, what kind of data can you provide for me today that you use in determining the site selection, Ellis talks for several lines and says, the two or three main sites that we picked are directly related to accidents that have happened within the city of Watertown where alcohol was involved or either serious injury or death occurred. He does not have any statistics that would suggest There are a lot of accidents at that location, and frankly says that just regular accidents occurred without the use of alcohol, and so it leaves that question left to be unanswered as to why they picked that spot. With respect to the cases I cited, I don't think you can find one case that says because publicity wasn't given, this checkpoint is unconstitutional and unreasonable when the state indicated that our reliance on this Downey case was misplaced. I think that's completely inaccurate. They went into a lot of factors there, and in part of the opinion, they specifically state that the state's contention that advanced publicity was unnecessary because the roadblock was well marked at the scene completely ignores the deterrence rationale. Accordingly, this omission in the present case likewise weighs against the reasonableness of the roadblock used to stop the defendant. What happens in Watertown is we have guidelines, and there was, according to Officer Ellis, notification given because there was a sign that was about 100 yards away from the checkpoint. And he said in the hearing that the checkpoint was proper because we had a reflective sign. We use the same signs that are used by the South Dakota Highway Patrol. They say stop, sobriety checkpoint. I asked him where they are placed in connection in relationship to the checkpoint, and he said 100 yards or further away, and that's the notice that we were given in Watertown about this checkpoint. In terms of the SITS case, I can't emphasize enough that it doesn't, I think the reason it doesn't get into the guidelines is because they trust the states and the cities to come up with their guidelines, and I think they hinted that here's what they did in Michigan. They had an advisory committee, and here's who was on that committee. A lot of people, the prosecutors, the local police, the state police, the University of Michigan, and they came up with guidelines. And SITS says, under those guidelines, sobriety checkpoints are constitutional. And compare that to what happened on June 28th, that's not even close to what we did in Watertown. I didn't know about who else was on this committee. I didn't receive any documentation regarding anything. We just heard about a checkpoint because you drive up on them. As far as the notice, I again think there's many other ways to give notice to the public about what's going on, and it sure happens at the Highway Patrol level. It seems to me pretty obvious that the Highway Patrol was suggesting, based on Ellis's testimony anyway, that if you're going to run a checkpoint, we're not going to be in charge of it. You need to have some guidelines. And so I don't know why they decided in Watertown to come up with a little bit different way of doing things, but they indicated, as I said earlier, they've changed the way they do things now.
How was it different from the Highway Patrol guidelines as far as the notice requirement?
The Highway Patrol just says they're going to give notice. They don't put a specific date, and that's attached as an exhibit at the suppression hearing. Exhibits 3 and 4 have this Highway Patrol guidelines. It seems like Watertown used a few of those, and I don't have a problem with some of the changes. The Highway Patrol's says advanced general publicity of the Highway Patrol's intent to establish sobriety checkpoints will be announced to the media by the districts or the department's public information officer. And of course, the difference is when I get the documentation back from the Highway Patrol, which is also an exhibit at the suppression hearing, they're able to tell you when it was on the radio and what times and dates. And it would seem to me that would be a pretty easy thing to do. It appears that Watertown adopted other aspects of these guidelines, and I'm not criticizing the guidelines so much as the failure to comply with the guidelines that brings us where we are today. I don't want to give up on just saying the publicity is the biggest part, because every case you read, they don't single out one thing that says that's why this is unreasonable. It's sort of a totality of the circumstances, I guess. They look at these guidelines and was this done properly? Because clearly you can't just set up a checkpoint out here today with no reason. You'd have to know why you're doing it there. You can't do it without any notice. We gave you 100 yards notice. That's not the notice. I can't find a case that says exactly what has to happen. I think they trust the state departments
the Highway Patrol, and they trust that the local departments, if they're going to take on this task, they're going to do it, they're going to do it right. I don't think any court wants to say, here's exactly what has to happen. If you're going to have a checkpoint, you have to do these things. I want this court to just have a narrow holding that says, if you have guidelines in place, then they have to be followed. I want this court to say, we understand that sobriety checkpoints are constitutional. We're not going to be the state that says they're not. I want this court just to say that a narrow holding that says Watertown had guidelines in place and they didn't follow them. Based on all the factors that we presented at the trial court, and I'm arguing today, they didn't follow them. They didn't do what they said they were going to do. Obviously, the most important part of that, is the notice. And I thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you, counsel.
The court will be in recess until 11 o'clock.